the Packer and Durham podcast.
Blake James, director of athletics at the University of Miami, will join us coming up here in about a half an hour or so. But let's take you to Charlottesville, Virginia, where Brian O'Connor joins us, the baseball coach of the Hoos. I know he wishes he was still playing like everybody else, but, man, what a great run. Coach, first of all, always great having you on the show. I know you're recruiting like crazy and playing catch-up, but, man, that was some kind of run you took us on.
Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate that. I appreciate you guys having me on. It was really special, for sure. I mean, any team that gets to Omaha has had a special year. We all know how hard that is to do. As you all have well documented, the path that we took to get to Omaha was very, very unique, and which made it all that much more memorable and special. And really appreciate the effort of our guys and the route that we took to get there. And you know, we've been there, as you know, five times now, and they're all different. This one clearly was the most challenging and different that we've experienced.
Coach, I want to go to something you said after it ended the other night, and you said this would be one of the most special teams in Virginia baseball history. And I think, and those of us that have been blessed and fortunate to be connected to teams and schools, I understood what you meant. But I think some people are surprised you say that about a team that doesn't win the national championship. But yet, when you've been doing it as long as you have, I kind of get it. But just for somebody who might have been watching and heard you say that, what connects this team to the legacy of Virginia baseball in that way that you spoke of the other night?
Well, you guys well know that no matter what sport it is, there's only one team, and it's going to be Mississippi State or Vanderbilt. There's only one team that ends the season with a win, right? And so certainly we want to win the title. That was our goal. But, you know, what I meant by what I said there was just what this team was made of, the position that they were in early April, and what they – you know, what they stood for, and that they stood up and rose to the occasion and found a way. That's why in our history of our program, they will always be thought of by me as really the special team that just would not quit. They were going to find a way. And, you know, and guys, it wasn't just one player. It wasn't just three players. It wasn't just five players. We could spend a 15-minute segment on this show and go around each one of our position players in the regional and super regional, and we could say, if Logan Michaels didn't do this, or Chris Newell didn't do this, or even with our pitching staff, Griffin McGarry, Matt, if one guy didn't do what they did, you don't advance on to the super regional, you don't advance on to Omaha. And that, to me, is what will always make it special, is that it was a group, it was a team. It took each and every one of them in a different game, at a different step, to emerge, to allow that opportunity to happen. And so that's what, for me, will always make this team this special team, for sure.
Coach, I know it's a team game, but I said this the other day, and I'm not sure if it was on this show or on the radio show in the afternoon, but I'm not so sure that Griff McGarry didn't make more money during this tournament run than any other individual in the College World Series. And I mean that as a positive, because his last effort was as good as it gets now. He was absolutely incredible.
Well, you know, in a day and age of the emergence and of the NIL and all that kind of stuff, Griff McGarry threw that. All you can stuff all that stuff in a box, you know, make a name. He delivered and made money for his name by throwing the ball forward,
right?
You know? And so you are exactly right. I mean, this guy, I'll tell you, he was one of my last end of the year meetings yesterday. I have all the players come in for a minimum of 30 minutes. They sit in my office. We talk about the future, what has been done in the past, the future, and kind of lay the groundwork. And I just sat there, Mark, and just said, you know, in my time as a coach and as a player, I have never had a player that did what Griff McGarry did. And that was at the lowest of lows of where you can be, you know, 5-6 weeks ago, and to emerge and did what this kid did, you know, not just Omaha, super regional, regional. And I think you're exactly right. If I'm a major league club, I'm looking at this young man saying the trajectory of this guy's performance is exactly the way we want it. And it is so, his skill level is so completely elite. And hey, those are the kind of, you guys know, those are the kind of guys when we flip on ESPN or MLB Network at late at night and watch the highs, that's what they look like.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff that it looks like. And I'm just, I think he served himself really, really well.
Yeah, Coach, he made really, really good teams look really ordinary at the plate, especially that last effort when you really needed him. And he was just awesome. I mean, he wasn't good. He was awesome. And, you know, Mississippi State's incredibly talented. As we know, you don't get to be in a championship series without doing it. And, you know, he goes in the eighth inning with that no-hitter, and you're like, hey, forget about wins and losses. You're watching a dude just throw a masterpiece where Mississippi State had no idea until they finally solved him with one hit. But, man, alive, like you said, didn't matter if it was the regional, the super regional, or what he did in Omaha, he was filthy. I mean, just filthy good.
Oh, it was. I mean, it's as good as I've ever seen somebody. And it was just completely dominant. It was in the strike zone. He's in that zone, and it was it makes you wonder, guys, what was the coach thinking even after he hit the 2-run home run? What was the coach thinking even taking him out of the game? You know, trust me, I've been waking up every night since then, shaking my head in a bad dream. But I'm so proud of him, and it was amazing what he did, and the stuff was just lights out.
Brian, couple things here. We've gotten into different conversations, and you've been so gracious with your time to join us through all this. And a couple things triggered. One, we had Daniel Panero on last week. We got a chance to visit with him from Florida. He was great. But he mentioned something I think stuck with both Mark and I in the conversation, and that was that little things, details, end up being the difference. And while that probably rang a little more true after the ball game the other night, the thing that sits with me is that's kind of what your program's been about. I mean, you've been a routine, details, keep it in front of you type program. What does it mean that 6 years later from a national championship, a guy who's trying to make his career and get healthy in pro baseball comes up and says immediately, Virginia will be successful if they do the little things? I mean, that's got to make a guy who's built the thing feel pretty good, I think.
Well, I'll tell you, when you mentioned Danny Panero's name, the reason I was smiling all the time, because the young man just brings a smile to my face, you know, and I remember when we recruited him out of Canada and the first time we saw him, and he was just one of those players that I really felt helped continue to change our program because of his approach to the game and his fun-loving openness approach to the game. And, you know, Danny's right. You know, we take a tremendous amount of pride in the details, in the little things. That's the foundation of our program. That, and I really believe that you concentrate on those little things every day. And, you know, it creates windows and opportunities throughout seasons to potentially do what we did this year. And what happens is there's so much talent out on the field. Dallas Baptist had great talent. ODU had great talent. South Carolina had great talent. All these teams that we played on the journey to Omaha. But I'll tell you, guys, what happens is there's little tiny moments in each one of those games that decides, and it's very, very small, decides whether you win or lose the ball game. And every time, it's a detail. It's a small thing. You know, we don't get, against Mississippi State, we don't get the safety squeeze down with first and third, one out, to extend our lead. And because we don't do the details of getting that down, and we don't extend our lead, it opens the door for Mississippi State. So, you know, although there's many of those details that allowed us to win the games, you know, and they're very, very small, they can also cost you. So it will always be, it's been from day one, 18 years ago, when I arrived here that we stress those little details, and it will not change because it makes the difference at the most important and crucial time.
And it can happen in the first inning, like with Andrew Abbott in the Tennessee game. You guys made plays, get them off the board, and now next thing you know, you got momentum and you score and game, set, match. And there's another arm that was filthy, right? I mean, goodness gracious. Andrew Abbott was awesome in this playoff series too. Just really, it's exactly what you wanted. You have to have it.
Yeah, you have to. You have to have a number one like that. You know, everybody playing at that time of the year has one. You know, this guy is, you know, it's just his story. I just love talking about his story. The fact that, you know, he was getting called last year in the fourth and fifth round in a shortened draft and makes the decision to come back and turn himself into a starter and everything involved with that. And then to deliver the results that he did, to have a year where he had 162 strikeouts in 100 innings. And he's going to be another guy that's going to be served very well in 2.5 weeks in the Major League Baseball draft and is going to really have helped himself. But you got to have those guys. Those are the guys that it takes everybody, but those are the individual performances and the individual players that take it to another level that allow you to do the special things.
Couple of things here. One, the new contract extension I know is important. It's nice to have. It's a security blanket for what you and your staff and your program are doing. I keep coming back to something you just said a minute ago. Your arrival harkened, quote, the golden era of Virginia baseball. I mean, yeah, there had been that 96 ACC title with Seth Greisinger and things like that, but the facilities, all the things to make Virginia a valued commodity in college baseball have happened under your watch. Is this the time of year after these player meetings when you travel to recruit and things like that, that you think about what you've built? And in those player meetings, do you get ideas about where you want to go?
Well, sure do. And I appreciate you asking that because those meetings are crucial every year in making slight adjustments, you know, learning, right? I spend a lot of time in those meetings listening. And then what I do as part of the recruiting, you know, when you're out all summer seeing players, you have time at night, you have time in the morning for reflection. And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And I think reflection is important for two reasons. One, you know, when you have success, it's important that we feel good about what we're doing, right? And so to be excited about what has been accomplished and what can be, and then reflection is important to continue to adapt as the game changes, as college baseball changes, as little adjustments that you want to learn to make your program better and give the players the best possible experience. You know, if we just sit around and say, hey, for the last 18 years, we've had it figured out, we're not going to change anything, we're going to get beat and the game's going to pass us by. So those meetings are crucial. And, you know, I feel fortunate with the contract extension. I'm honored that Carla Williams thought enough of the job that we're doing here. And that's important too, guys, as well, because when you're out in college baseball these days, we're recruiting freshmen and sophomores in high school. And when you talk to a parent, a player, one of the questions that always comes up when a young person makes a decision that early is, hey, coach, are you going to be there? Are you going to be the coach there when my son is playing in that uniform? And we're fortunate when you have a contract extension like that, you can sit across from somebody and look them in the eyes and say, you're darn right, I'm going to be here because the university's made that decision, that commitment for that to happen.
Coach, I'd be remiss to ask you kind of a two-part question. Number one, going back to Omaha, the whole testing procedure, did you guys have any issues with that? And number two, your thoughts about what happened to Elliott Avent and NC State and how that was handled?
Well, I'll say first, I'm just crushed for those players for NC State, you know, because you know we know how hard it is to get to that position. We know how hard they fought, and anybody has to fight to get to Omaha, and then to go to 2-0, and just to have that opportunity taken away is just I just can't imagine what those players and that coaching staff are going through. my heart goes out to them. It does, and an incredibly tough situation. You know, we didn't have any problems with it because in our group, you know, the group is considered the 27 players on the active roster and then the 13 individuals that have constant day-to-day contact with those players. You know, the almost everybody in our 40-man group was vaccinated. And if you're vaccinated, you're not tested. Only the non-vaccinated ones are. And so we never had any issue with it. The couple of individuals that were not vaccinated in our group, they got tested multiple times while we were there in Omaha, and we just never had an issue with it because the vaccinated players were never an issue. So I don't know the details how everything rolled out. I just know that it's just heartbreaking that those young men didn't have a chance to win another game. None of us know whether they would have or not, right? They were obviously playing very, very well, but they would win another game and then win 2 out of 3 in that championship series. So I just, it pains me that they didn't have that opportunity because, you know, you just think across the country, all the teams that have great programs that have never won a national championship. I mean, Mississippi State, the history and the lore of their program and how great they've been for 50 years, the fact that they've never won a national championship, it is so incredibly hard to do, and it just hurts that NC State didn't have that opportunity.
Well yeah, said. You're right about that. That's incredibly well said. Real quick, last week, right after you joined us, we had Frank Cignetti Jr., the offensive coordinator at Boston College, on the show. And apparently your longtime assistant, Kevin McMullen, and Frank Cignetti Jr. go back to football days at IUP. I always thought Mac looked like a linebacker, and Cignetti confirmed it for us the other day on the show. So if you ever need to, we got a guy that can get you some game tape if you ever need to see Mac stop the run and fill the gap, okay?
You know what? We might need to get a little bit of that. You know, Mac's been right by my side for 18 years, and I know this, right? The way Mac looks, if anything happens on the field or anything like that, that's the guy I want to my right. You know, backing me up.
Congratulations. No, wait, you're right. No, you want him in front of you, Brian. Yeah. You don't want him to your right. You want him in front of you.
That's right.
Take care. Thank you as always. See you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Brian O'Connor's the head baseball coach of Virginia. Phenomenal run for the Cavaliers and always gracious with his time. When we come back, more Packer and Durham rolling on. Blake James is going to join us. I think from Maine at 9:30, Pac.
Nice.
I think we're going north. I think we're going north for Blake James, just like we did last summer. We'll do that and more when we continue. Manny Diaz has had an interesting recruiting strategy develop. We will talk about that as well when Packer and Durham continues on a Tuesday on ACCN.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Blake James coming up here in about 5 or 10 minutes. Always interesting with Blake. We got a number of different topics to address with him. Now, we'll get into name, image, and likeness and all kinds of stuff, but he's always interesting, Blake James is. Always.
Yeah. Law starts in his state on Thursday. So, yeah, you betcha. And we got some late pending guidelines and all sorts of other things being issued by the NCAA. But let's turn to football here for a minute because Manny Diaz, I think, you know, we had Dave Clawson last week talk about roster management and all the things that are happening, including expansion of the college football playoff. Well, Manny Diaz and Miami had their Paradise Camp last week, which is a look at some of the better high school players, not only in South Florida, but all over the country. And he took it one step further in terms of some of this early recruiting that's going on for the first time in 15 months in face-to-face encounters.
We're not a high-pressure outfit. There's a lot of schools that kind of press the kids to try to commit, you know what I mean? I think they try to get some fake momentum because of that, and that's fine. They can win the recruiting, you know, bake-off in the month of June because that's not signing day. We want to be authentic in our relationships. And if a kid picks mommy, we want him to, you know, we want it to be for the right reason. So like I said, I feel good about where we're at.
Hello. Anybody home? just saying.
Just thought I'd throw that log on the fire.
Just thought I'd mention that any fake momentum, you know who you are out there, apparently. I don't follow recruiting. And Wes, I know you don't either.
No.
I know it's important.
No, sir.
You got to have dudes and you got to develop dudes. I get how all that works. But I don't worry about – I had a guy call me yesterday who's a big Florida State fan. Pack-wise, nobody talking about Florida State is the number three in recruiting rankings. I said, first of all, I didn't know that. Thanks. Number two, National Signing Day is in December. And number three,
right,
whoever you do sign in December, we'll find out about a year or two down the road if they can play. I don't. They may not be able to play dead in a cowboy movie. I don't know. Four-star, five-star, walk-on, whatever. But that was an interesting comment by the head football coach of the U. Now, that was intended for somebody out there. I don't know who it might be, but that was intended for somebody.
Okay. Now, here's the other thing about this. We get into commitments and signings and the differences, right, Pack? And again, neither one of us are going to – we're going to bring other people on this show that talk recruiting because it ain't going to be us.
Right.
It's not going to be me and that other guy right there. That's not happening. Because we worry about them when they show up on campus and are issued a jersey number and listed on the roster.
That's when I pay attention.
The idea, though, of where this is combined with the things that Dave Clawson said last week, Pack, I find this to be really interesting. Because Dave Clawson basically said, you've got to go through some checks and balances, not just this year, but maybe in the next couple of years, as to how the numbers work, right?
Yep.
So Manny Diaz is not going to go all in and start throwing it up on the line here with everybody else. This is going to get really, really tricky for certain schools. And if your school's getting a lot of commitments early, great. Remember what they are, commitments, right?
Verbal.
Because you don't know that they're going to sign. They're verbal, right? She's telling you she'll go to the prom with you. She ain't gone to the prom yet. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I don't blame him for what he said, by the way. I don't blame him at all. I think somebody had to say it from that perspective.
I think all coaches are in different spots. You know, if you're you know, Nick Saban and Ryan Day and Dabo Sweeney, what you're doing from a recruiting perspective, where your program is, your approach could be totally different than somebody that's trying to rebuild a program, whether they're traditionally a power or they're just getting started brand spanking. Everybody's in a different spot. So again, what works for Miami may not work for Georgia Tech. What works for Clemson may not work for Virginia. You know how we play this game. So that's why I don't get too crazy with recruiting. I know you got to get good players. I know you got to create momentum and enthusiasm. But at the end of the day, whoever you sign in December, you better hope they can play and want to be coached. And that's what it's all about. And that's why I always say, wake me up when they get on campus, then I'll start paying attention to all that stuff. I'm not telling you it's not important.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you it's more important once you get them on campus and what you do with them.
No doubt. No doubt. We're going to keep an eye on this, and we'll use other people. Tom Luganville comes to mind and others who can talk to us about kind of how these numbers are working through the summer and then into the fall when things start to take shape for the early signing period in December. But that Manny Diaz comment,
it was a good one.
That had some flavor to it. Now,
I liked it.
Yeah, it was. We'll put that one in the file, by the way, just in case we need it for later on. Sit tight. We're going to talk to Manny Diaz, his boss, the leader of the Hurricanes, Blake James, will join us next here on Packer and Durham. And remember, as we said, we're what, about 48 hours away now from name, image, and likeness becoming a law in his state. How's Miami prepared to deal with that and more when we continue after this on Packer and Durham?
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program.
Oh, man.
We've got important things to discuss with our next guest, because this is a critical week for not only the NCAA, which always seems to be the case, but it's a humongous week for a state like Florida, because name, image, and likeness goes into full effect on July 1. Let's bring on the director of athletics at the University of Miami, who is not in Miami.
Aww.
That'd be Blake James, who got beautiful scenery. Must be up there in Maine, chilling and grilling. It's probably about 65 degrees. Blake, first of all, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. I'm assuming everything's great in Maine.
Hey, everything is great. Good to be on with you guys. Really love the entrance music as well. Always good to do a little Miami sound going there to start us off.
Yeah. Look, we got lots of business to do here, but I wanna get back to some in-house stuff. You have established now the Athletic Director Society at the U, and I, given kind of where the economics of college athletics are and things of that nature, you're trying to stay in the game with facility enhancements. I know you got a lot of things planned here. Why the Athletic Directors Society encompass all those facility enhancements? Is that kind of the bottom line?
Yeah. Again, I think it's maybe easy, and easy isn't the right word. My development people wouldn't be happy with that. But when you have a project that's real specific to go get that people are real interested in giving to, those campaigns can tend to have a lot of success, or at least for our program. But there's a lot of ongoing capital needs that we need support on beyond the annual fund dollars. And I think this really creates a vehicle to allow people to make an impact for the program on a number of different capital projects that maybe aren't a specific focus of a capital campaign that would be of interest to an individual. This is really going to help the program overall, from, you know, some of our Olympic sports and what we need to do on that front, you know, to even some, you know, things that we need to do with football or baseball or men's, women's basketball, some of our more prominent sports. So it's an opportunity for people who have a passion to the university to continue just to make a great impact on what we're able to do as a program, because as you guys touched on, and I know you talk about all the time, just where we are in college athletics, the bar continues to raise, and we need to make sure we're doing everything we can to keep up with not only those schools in the ACC, but around the country.
Blake, what do you get a sense of the temperature with folks coming out of a COVID pandemic who really haven't had a chance to travel? Now they're starting to get out a little bit. As far as fundraising and dollars and season tickets and all that stuff, what's the temperature like from the Miami fan base?
I think there's a lot of excitement. You know, again, there's still some that I think have some hesitation, want to see how things play out. But I think as more and more people get the vaccine, which I know will be a big help in terms of what the fall sports season looks like, there's excitement. I think we'll see people eager and looking forward to being back in the stadium. As you guys know, we open up September 4th in Atlanta against Alabama. I'm anticipating a full house there and a lot of passionate Hurricane fans watching us take on the Crimson Tide. And I think we'll see that throughout the year, both at our facility in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium and at you know, the places we stop along the way in the ACC.
Yeah, there's no question. I think a lot of people are excited about getting back to what the normal college football environment looks like. Well, when the clock strikes midnight tomorrow night, you are going to be in the new world of name, image, and likeness as a law. You're one of a half dozen states that are going to be impacted right away by this on the 1st of July. I kind of could go about three different ways, but just tell me what your initial thoughts are about what you think Thursday will be like for your program and maybe other schools in the state of Florida, Blake.
I think you'll see a lot of things happen on Thursday. Again, remember, we've had the benefit that kids at the schools in the state of Florida have known for over a year now that this is going to happen on July 1st. And so they've had time to, I think, be planning and preparing and getting ready to take advantage of it. Obviously, with the news yesterday that the NCAA came out with, all the students in the country are going to be able to have some type of name, image, and likeness program that their institution puts in place. But our kids have had that benefit of knowing for a year there's an opportunity there. In Miami, obviously an international city, I think there'll be a number of opportunities. With that said, I don't think we're going to see 400 kids signing major endorsement deals and sponsorships or anything like that. But I do think that the law that was put in place in Florida will do a good job in letting kids capitalize on their name, image, and likeness.
Blake, obviously the state of Florida's had a head start knowing what July 1 was about. What was your take on the NCAA news yesterday for everybody outside it, you really basically don't have to worry about it. I at least assume you don't have to worry about it.
Well, I'm still in the camp that we need to do something through our leaders in Washington, D.C., and have a national standard. Again, as you look at what came out yesterday, it's schools that are in states that have laws have to follow those laws. Schools that aren't in states that don't have laws yet basically get to create their rules. And so to have a bunch of different rules out there in terms of what kids can and can't do, I just don't think is the right platform. I've been in conversation a number of times with our representatives in Washington, D.C. about the importance of a national standard. As good of a job as I think the Florida law does in creating an opportunity while still doing some things to, I guess I'll say, put some guardrails in place to protect both the students and also college athletics, I think we all got to be operating by the same set of rules.
Blake, I'm going to kind of guess that you and your colleagues in the ACC are pretty unified on wanting something to be done on Capitol Hill here. It seems that Bubba Cunningham's been about that. I think I've heard others talk about it from within the conference footprint. Is that right?
100%. You know, one of the things I think that I've been most pleased with when you look at what we've gone through the last 15 months really is really been just great alignment in really – everything that's come at us from COVID to name, image, and likeness. You know, first credit Commissioner Swofford and his leadership, and now on to Commissioner Phillips, our president's chancellors on the COVID front, the medical advisory group, and then the athletic directors from COVID to NIL. There's just been great alignment, and really the importance and the belief from everyone in our league that we need some help from the national level to make sure we're all playing by the same rules.
Blake, I'm going to go on a couple different paths with you here. The news about what happened to NC State's baseball program in Omaha was just, that's one of the all-time gut punches, right? But the protocols laid out from the medical officials and experts was pretty consistent, and the NCAA really followed it to a T. Do you sense that there's going to be any conversation that those protocols could be adjusted for 21-22, given the fact that where we were a year ago in COVID versus where we are now is a different, granted, we're still in a pandemic, but it feels like we're in a different stage. Do you think there will be adjustments for 21-22? And on part two of that is, from a vaccination standpoint for student athletes, how do you think that's going to be handled by whether it be the University of Miami or anybody else moving forward about vaccinations for student athletes for the next sports calendar year?
Yeah, first, I want to congratulate Boo and Coach Avant and the incredible run. I mean, what an exciting team to watch in Omaha. And obviously, like everyone who was cheering for NC State, disappointed that it had to end the way it did for them. To your question in the bigger picture on COVID, yeah, we're going to continue to evolve. I'm confident of that. When you look at where we are today versus where we were 1 year ago, I know I was probably sitting here in the same spot talking to you guys about could we have a season, those different types of things. And we were able to do it. And I felt confident at that point that we would. It went and happened. The ACC did it better than anyone. We played more games than anyone. But it is going to continue to evolve. The vaccination question is, I think, a challenging one in that different states are at different points in how they address it. And so I think we'll see different programs, really have different approaches to the vaccination. And so could that create some challenges? I'm sure it will when you have maybe one team that's 100% vaccinated and you have another team that is only 60%. But honestly, I think it's an advantage for the team that's completely vaccinated. You know, we're working with all of our student athletes to get vaccinated, but it's their choice. And, you know, as much as we try to educate and let them know that we believe it's the right thing to do, that's something that we have to leave to them to make that decision. Obviously, it's under emergency use authorization right now. And I think there's, some questions on that. And so, again, we just try to provide as much education as possible and then provide the opportunity for those to get vaccinated. But to answer your question, I think those that are fully vaccinated, those teams that are fully vaccinated, probably will be at an advantage to those that aren't at that. And that's just something that teams have to live with. And, you know, we did it last year and got the majority of our games in. But it's something that, as you said, we're still in a pandemic and have to recognize we're going to be dealing with it for, through another sports season, I'm sure, to some level.
Blake, I read about this the other day, and it had nothing to do with sports. I want to preface that. But you mentioned state-to-state regulations and vaccination. When you get onto an institutional campus, you're a private institution. You've got public institutions in the state of Florida. There could be a wide swath of the way vaccinations are going to be handled with just campus enrollment, period, correct? I mean, your campus might be different than FIU across the road or up the road at Stetson near Tampa or whatever the case may be, right?
Yeah, no, again, I think you're right. There's obviously an approach that's been laid out by our leadership in the state as to what the approach is on vaccinations. And then you have the private schools, the public schools, and everyone has to follow mm-hmm. that guidance. But then again, I think they'll each apply it to their own institution as to, you know, what approach they're going to take within the boundaries of the law.
Blake, what was your initial reaction to the proposal of a college football playoff going to 12 teams?
I wasn't surprised at the expansion. The number 12 at the first, caught me. But again, I come from an FCS background where we had 16, so I don't think it's out of the realm of is it too many. Again, we made 16 work at the FCS, and they still make 16 work at the FCS level. At least I believe they're still at 16. And so again, I think it's something mm-hmm. that, from what I've heard, and I haven't seen the full deck on the presentation yet, but from everything I've heard from those that have seen it, this is a number and an approach that, you know, really makes sense given where we've gone. I mean, from the minute we went from every bowl maybe being a national championship game to one national championship to now two semis in a championship, I think this was a natural evolution of where it's to go. I think a lot of things that we have as leaders now to figure out is what's the right situation for our students, and is that, you know, looking at, you know, an additional bye week, a difference in terms of the number of regular season games, how do you spread things out, and just the safety and well-being of our students. And I'm confident we'll get there and we'll go forward. And this will be something that I know the fan base will love.
Blake, you've got a unique perspective. You've already mentioned that you spent a long time at FCS institutions. That playoff does push it to 15 if you go all the way through, because they only play 11 regular season games. And while the math may work that way, I also know, too, that there's not an FBS athletic director alive that wants to give back a game, home or away, in the regular season. So do right. we have to find that – do we have to find that fine line, if you will, about how this works if we go to 16?
In my opinion, yeah. I mean, there's got to be a fine line. I think there's even a possibility in a certain scenario you could have two teams that play 17 games. And you know, those are things I think that we have to look through all the different scenarios and then really come up with what's best. As you said, FCS has done it with two teams being at 15 games for mm-hmm. a number of years. And it's something that we'll just have to continue to really massage and work. And the other thing, and you guys know this, you've been covering college sports enough, what we end up with here doesn't mean it's going to be there forever. Something will happen that will change, and it'll look different. And we'll be on another call at some point down the road having that conversation.
By the way,
you're right about that.
Just curious, when you go up to Maine, what are the chances you run into a couple black bears up there? That ever happened to you there on the deck? You know, black bears?
Ironically, I was walking my dogs yesterday, and the neighbor here told me that he just saw a black bear cross the path I was walking last week. So I have not seen one yet. I've seen some deer. I've seen a fox, a lot of wild, but fortunately no black bears yet or coyotes.
Hey, you be careful up there, boss man. Listen, we need you. All right? We can't be up there walking the hounds and the black bears go crazy. That's a problem. That's an issue.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Blake, always great. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the pine tree state. It looks like it's really rough up there this morning. Looks tough for you.
No, Terry, let me see if I can give you a little shot here of the lake. Did I get the lake in there, maybe?
Nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Look at you.
Oh. There we go.
Oh, really? We just
I'm
got
gonna,
that at
find,
the end?
I'm going to find nice. You to enjoy it.
Yeah, I got
always good to be on with you guys.
Hey, Blake, I got to be honest with you. I thought when you were going to hold that up, we're just going to see like a vast forest and maybe a black bear, peeking out through the trees. I was not expecting the lake. I really wasn't. That's spectacular,
man.
Man, that is yeah.
holy
nice.
Cow. What's who's a, got it a, better than nice, you?
Nice time to be here. So I'm enjoying it. Yeah. Enjoying the week. Actually, put a little thing out there, the Fenway Bowl. I'm going to head down to Boston here shortly and go meet our partners from the Fenway Bowl and take in a Red Sox game tonight. So go Sox. And
tough day. Tough day, Pat.
Hey, tough day. Hey, Blake, we appreciate the invite, but we're good. We'll catch you in Charlotte.
Yeah. Thanks, Blake. Yeah.
I'll see you guys in a couple weeks in Charlotte.
You got it. Safe
yeah,
travel.
We'll see you. Oh, you can count on it. Yeah. Want to hear all the highlights of the Fenway trip. All right. Blake James, Athletics Director at Miami.
Thanks, Blake.
You bet. You bet. Thank you, sir. Always great to see you. Man, okay, Kelsey, EJ, tonight on In Play, beat that, huh? Oh,
nice.
Beat Blake James, right? Looking out at the lake tonight at 10 o'clock, Kelsey and EJ, they get Grammy-nominated artist and Duke alum Mike Posner to talk about climbing Mount Everest last month and seeing Duke basketball players at his concert. Check it out tonight, 10 o'clock on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. Mike Posner tonight with Kelsey and EJ on In Play. When we come back, Mike Young, he's going to need some more popcorn. Well, in fact, he should be buying the new popcorn. We'll tell you why when we come back right after this on Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Really white. That's right. You know why we're playing that?
I don't.
You know why we're playing Bobby Darin on the way back? Do you know?
I just said I do not know.
Well, over the weekend, a young girl was bitten by a shark at Ocean Isle Beach. However, the mayor says she needs to get over it. It was more of a graze.
Should I give you the testimony that should apply to every human being on the planet Earth?
Wait. Hold on. Young girl bitten by a shark at Ocean Isle Beach. Mayor says she needs to get over it. It was because it was more of a graze.
I didn't see that story.
He didn't say she needs to get over it, but more of a graze is the quote the mayor gave.
Oh, I didn't see
more anything. Of a graze, not a bite.
The second the big toe hits the water, you are the visiting team. That has been in play in my world for about 20 some odd years doing radio shows. And every time I see a story, a guy gets out there scuba diving and a whale chews him up, or a shark bites somebody, or stingray puts something through your kneecap, I sit there and I go, it doesn't even faze me anymore. I go, well, yeah, you probably ticked him off.
All right.
Probably what happens.
There we go.
Be like somebody coming to my house.
I just wanted to make sure.
You would be the visiting team. You're in for a long night. Come over to my house in the middle of the night.
Any chance we get to revisit your words to live by, I think it's important. This is also important. Yesterday, Virginia Tech announced Mike Young, their basketball coach, who has done a remarkable job, has signed a 3-year contract extension through 26-27. So more popcorn for everybody at Castle Coliseum. In fact, I'd be surprised if we don't have a little Mike Young trademark popcorn next year in Blacksburg, Pack. They ought to have some of that.
Just, I've been so impressed with the job he's done. He inherited not much, and I tell you, he is just coached. He's recruited right. But, man, can he X and O. He is the real deal.
Yep.
And Virginia Tech hit a home run with that hire. That was a absolute grand slam.
Such a great hire.
Yep.
And I said it last year, and I will say it again. There are a lot of other schools that should have and could have pulled the trigger and didn't.
Yep.
And Virginia Tech is a winner for hiring the hometown guy as their basketball coach.
Yep.
There you go.
100% right.
Very quickly, thanks to Brian O'Connor, Blake James. Always great to visit with those gentlemen. We appreciate their time. We're back here tomorrow, kids. Final day of July. See you at 7 a.m. Thanks to Josh Macri, Chrissy Velez, back row, and everybody in the bunker. See you in the morning.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.